matter of the protest of the contract for retail pharmacy design, et cetera. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Robert White, Hangley, Aronchick, Siegel, Pudlin, and Schiller on behalf of the appellant, Samuka.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and members of the court. Peter Slocum of Lowenstein Sandler on behalf of the respondent at University Hospital.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Sarah Gregory, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of Amicus Curiae, the Attorney General.
Welcome, counsel. Just a reminder to keep your mics on mute when you're not speaking. Mr. Weigel. Mr. Weigel, please go ahead.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve a few moments or a few minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine.
The question presented in this appeal is in some respects a narrow procedural one, but it has a number of important implications. I'd like to begin by summarizing three ways in which that's true. First, this appeal is very significant to Samuka, which has been subjected to a fundamental bait and switch from a state instrumentality that told Samuka that this was a public procurement, not a private contract, that University Hospital is a state agency, that the procurement was subject to a host of public law requirements, and that challenges to the hospital's procurement-related decisions had to be brought in the appellate division, only to repudiate all of those representations after Samuka filed such a challenge here. And as a result, Samuka's claims, which allege serious conflicts of interest in patient steering, have yet to be considered by any court. Second, the issue in this appeal is important to the clarity of the law with respect to the scope of Rule 223. In our view, this court's decisions have articulated a straightforward, easy-to-apply test to determine when challenges to government action lie in the appellate division under Rule 223. And in fact, the effect of this court's decisions, as we read them, has been to streamline and simplify that test. But the appellate division decision here, respectfully, took a significant step backward, muddying the law by substituting a multi-factor balancing test based on an ad hoc enumeration of factors that introduces significant uncertainty about the specific entities to which Rule 223 applies. Third, the appellate division's decision has important implications for any future challenges to University Hospital's publicly funded procurements. University Hospital is a state instrumentality that receives significant legislative appropriations to perform its statutorily mandated government functions of protecting public health. In fact, for 2024, the legislature has appropriated over $100 million for University Hospital, and the hospital is preparing to use at least a portion of that money to build a new hospital facility on its campus. The implications of the appellate division's reasoning and opinion in this case, we believe, and indeed University Hospital's own express argument, is that University Hospital is not a government entity subject to procurement challenges at all. And we think in the context of the significant public funds the University Hospital spends, that decision or the implications of the appellate division's decision in that regard are deeply unsettling. We believe the applicability of Rule 223 to this case follows from this court's decisions and the history of the rule. And I'll start with the history. Prior to 1947, a person who wanted to challenge government action had to invoke one of the common law prerogative writs, including certiorari, mandamus, prohibition, and others. And this court described the prerogative writ as a means for private persons to obtain the redress or prevention of public wrongs by public bodies and officers. And the 1947 Constitution replaced those prerogative writs with a single form of action known as an action in lieu of prerogative writ, but it didn't alter the scope or the substance of the claims that could be brought. The writ of certiorari, which is the one under which this action falls, has always been used to appeal decisions of legislatively creative agencies. And this court discussed the history of the action in lieu of prerogative writ in its Lavolsi decision. And as this court stated even 85 years ago in Morgan versus Burnett, the writ was available to review judicial determinations and administrative acts of state agencies. And the 1947 Constitution vested discretion in this court to prescribe by rule where actions in lieu of prerogative writ should be brought. And the court did that when it prescribed Rule 223 and Rule 469. As this court explained in its Infinity Broadcasting decision, the overarching rule in New Jersey has long been that every proceeding to review the action or inaction of a local administrative agency is by complaint in the law division under Rule 469, and that every proceeding to review the action or inaction of a state administrative agency is by appeal to the appellate division under Rule 223. So that history and the text of Rule 223 suggest a straightforward two-part test. To determine whether a challenge to an entity's decision lies in the appellate division, one has to look at the nature first of the decision, and one has to look at the nature of the entity that made that decision. The first step, in our view, is the decision the sort that would historically have been subject to an action in lieu of prerogative writ? Because if the answer is no, then you're not under Rule 223 or Rule 469. You just don't meet the threshold step of the test. But if the decision being challenged is one, or the challenge is one, that would historically have been subject to an action in lieu of prerogative writ, the next step of the test is to determine whether the entity is a state entity. We believe this court's precedent is consistent with the standard. In Infinity Broadcasting, the court simplified the distinction between Rule 223 and Rule 469 by eliminating the single locality exception to Rule 223. The court said, we jettisoned the single locality exception to what it described as the broad rule that lodges appellate jurisdiction from the actions of state agencies in the appellate division. And the court went on to say, we affirm once more the basic tenet of appellate jurisdiction that, save for condemnation or inverse condemnation actions, appeals from state agency actions lie in the appellate division. And this court underscored that whether an entity was a state agency for purposes of Rule 223 didn't turn on the nature of the decision it made. It turned on whether it was charged with performing statewide responsibilities. And even when it was performing those responsibilities in the local area, it was still to be deemed as a state administrative agency for purposes of that rule. And in that case, the court found that the Meadowlands Commission was a state agency. It found that conclusion was in fact unassailable, that's the word this court used, based on the language of the commission's organic statute. And the court specifically cited statutory language providing that the commission was a state instrumentality exercising essential governmental functions.
So, counsel, courts may use slightly different phrasings in their opinions, but if we're talking about setting forth a test, why wouldn't we use the language in the rule itself, which speaks to state administrative agency and not state entity?
Well, Your Honor, I think it is significant when one looks at the, you know, the case law construing that terminology, that we haven't found a single case in which the court has placed interpretive weight on the word administrative. Now, we believe, and we'll certainly discuss this in more depth, that University Hospital qualifies as a state administrative agency. But the only case in which we've found in which a court has put any interpretive weight on the word agency in that term is the D.J. Miller case, the appellate division case cited by University Hospital. And I think significantly, that court didn't use the term administrative to carve out certain types of entities and distinguish, you know, state administrative entities from, or state administrative agencies from state agencies more broadly. It used that term to identify the type of decision that would be subject to an action in lieu of prerogative writ. And it said, if the sort of action being challenged or if the kind of challenge being brought takes the form of a common law tort action or a common law contract action, that's not going to be within the scope of the historic prerogative writ. It's a private law cause of action. And so those sorts of challenges aren't going to qualify. The term state administrative agency is given, there's some significant discussion of what it means in the Mandel Treatise, which both parties or maybe all three parties cite in this case. And we think the Mandel Treatise is instructive because it says that there are different definitions that one can find of the term state agency in New Jersey statutory law. And it points specifically to the one in the conflict of interest law, which it identifies as most clearly paralleling or most closely paralleling the use and meaning of the term as it appears in Rule 223. And I think significantly in that statute and others that are cited in our briefs and in the Mandel Treatise, the term expressly encompasses independent instrumentalities of the state.
So what you're saying begs the question of what a state administrative agency is. But if you're asking the court to adopt a framework that does not use that term, why would we deviate from the precise language of the rule?
Your Honor, I think University Hospital does qualify as a state administrative agency, and I think one can use the term state administrative agency to encompass agencies that are charged with implementing legislative programs, right? They are administering some legislative program. In contradistinction to that, if we look at this court's decisions in Vass v. Roberts and in the Lavalsi case, we'll see that the court identified as not a state and administrative agency, an entity, or rather an officer who was not created by the legislature, but was actually part of the legislature. That was the Vass v. Roberts case. And then also a commission created by the judiciary in the Lavalsi case.
Can you give us a definition for state entity and tell us how that differs from what you would consider a state administrative agency to mean?
Yes, Your Honor. And to be clear, just as a threshold matter, I don't mean to refer to state entity. State agency is, I think, the term that I would use and that the court used in the Infinity Broadcasting case. But I think state entity or state agency would encompass any entity that is created by an organ of the state, right? So that could be a judicial entity. It could be a legislative entity. It could be part of the legislature. It could be created by the legislature to discharge some legislative function or program. I think all of those entities would qualify as state entities, but entities that are created by the judiciary or entities that are part of the legislature itself, not created by the legislature in the way that administrative agencies are, they would not meet the definition of state administrative agency. And I think that distinction is, again, consistent with this court's case law to date construing the term.
To have an understanding of the scope of the test and the language that you're proposing, how many entities, agencies would that definition encompass?
Your Honor, I can't give you a number. I think what we know is that under our definition, it would include instrumentalities of the state that are identified as such, created by the legislature, have an organic statute the way University Hospital does, and are deemed to be instrumentalities of the state created to perform specific legislative functions, in this case, the function of serving public health, much as the way Rutgers University, as this court discussed in the Shim case, was created to serve the public function of public education. So those entities would qualify. But I think if I understand perhaps part of the implication of Your Honor's question, our opponents have suggested that the standard that we propose is going to somehow open the floodgates and would mean that the appellate division would be reviewing a much larger volume of decisions from a larger number of entities than is currently the case. We don't believe that's true. We think that concern is not well-founded. For one thing, neither university nor a hospital nor the attorney general, as far as we can see, was able to identify any specific entity that would count as a state administrative agency under our definition, but not currently. But I think the decision, the nature of the decision is an independent element of the test. And that's going to weed out a significant number of decisions. I think it's clear that whether the court is looking at a quintessential executive branch state administrative agency or an independent instrumentality, all of those agencies engage in all sorts of decisions and take all sorts of actions that challenges to which would not historically have been cognizable under a prerogative writ. And I think the D.J. Miller case is a good example of this, right? You have tort claims that are brought against agencies. I'll use a federal agency. The Postal Service gets into car accidents all the time. I have colleagues who represent the government and defend those. Those would not have been historically cognizable as prerogative writ actions. So that's a large number of actions that could be challenged in court, but they're not going to fall under either 223 or 469 for that matter, because they don't meet the threshold test of historically being cognizable as an action in lieu of prerogative writ. And I think it's also true that by their nature, different state administrative agencies, by virtue of what they do, some of them will have a relatively large number of decisions that challenges to which could fall under the scope historically of a prerogative writ, and others of them will have few decisions, relatively speaking at least, that fall with it, that would be challenged in the nature of a prerogative writ action. But I think what is indisputable and in fact undisputed in this case is that a procurement challenge to a state-funded contract has long been recognized as the sort of challenge that falls within the scope of the historic prerogative writ. So we don't believe there's any question that this case satisfies the first prong of the test that we've identified. And so that prong is going to read out a lot of decisions by a lot of different agencies, but we think there's no question it does not read out this challenge to this agency.
So let's look at the Restructuring Act and try to discern what it intended, what the history behind it was, because they allocated Rowan University to a principal department of the executive branch, the State Department, but they did not do that for University Hospital. What does that tell us?
Your Honor, we don't think that that is material in this case. Rutgers is also not allocated to a particular branch of the executive, and this court found in the Shim case that Rutgers, I think it used the term, it was clear, the conclusion was clear that Rutgers qualified as a state administrative agency in that case. I think when we look at the case law, in our view, the definition of state administrative agency has been broad and it has been a functional one. And so I don't think it turns on whether the statute includes particular language that says this is, you know, in but not of a particular agency. It looks at whether the agency was created by the legislature to pursue particular legislative purposes or a particular legislative program. And again, we think that's clearly the case with University Hospital. And it's also clearly the case that the decision being challenged here, the decision to issue a contract worth millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars in profits to University Hospital is the projection, and millions of dollars in profits to the contractor, that was done in pursuit of University Hospital's public health mission. It is a contract to operate a pharmacy on University Hospital's campus. And I think a similarly broad and functional definition of the term state administrative agency can be found in the appellate division's relatively recent decision in the Noctegal case, which we cite in our brief. That case involved a consortium of different entities that existed for only one purpose and one purpose only, and that was procurement. It was the procurement of an electronic toll collection system in that case. And the jurisdiction of the appellate division was challenged, and the allegation was made that none of the constituent entities, or at least some of the constituent entities in the consortium, didn't qualify as state administrative agencies. And the appellate division said, well, that's not really what's relevant here. What's relevant is the consortium and what it's doing and what its purpose is. And so viewed, the court had no difficulty concluding that the consortium should be deemed a state administrative agency in that case.
Looking at the statute again, how do you respond to the argument regarding Section 6.1D, which gives University Hospital the ability to sell itself, to enter into a transaction that results in the acquisition of the hospital, and the fact that that's a fairly unique characteristic of an entity that we would deem a state administrative agency? Are there any state administrative agencies that you know of that are able to sell themselves? Here we have the ability for University Hospital to do so, certainly subject to approval by the Superior Court and compliance with the Attorney General's regulations, but that does appear to be a pretty unique characteristic.
Your Honor, I agree. It is a unique characteristic, and I wouldn't be able to point the court to another entity that has that feature, but I don't think it's disqualifying with respect to the definition of state administrative agency. As Your Honor pointed out, it's not as if the hospital just has carte blanche to go and decide that it would be in its best interest or even the public's best interest to be sold. It's a very elaborate process. It requires court blessing. The court has to apply a standard and find that it's been met. So it is unique, and I would grant that we might have a different issue here if University Hospital had gone through that process and been sold and, you know, we were raising this issue again. But that's not where we are. I think this court has recognized that Rutgers is also a very unique institution, and that it has some features that are more analogous to those of a private institution and some features more analogous to those of a public institution. And nonetheless, in the Fine v. Rutgers case, this court said, unless it would disserve the purpose of Rutgers or the purpose of the program at issue, generally Rutgers should be viewed as a public institution. And I think that this court's analysis of Rutgers and Shim is consonant with that. They treated Rutgers as a state administrative agency, as a public institution in that case. I think similarly here, we're not looking at a potential sale of the hospital. We're looking at really a quintessential procurement for the purposes of promoting public health with a contract that is expressly conditioned on the receipt of state funds. And so respectfully, in our view, it's difficult to find a type of decision that is closer to the historical bullseye in terms of decisions that would be properly challenged through an action in lieu of prerogative writ. And we think also under this court's analysis and the distinction this court drew between 223 on the one hand and 469 on the other hand, in the Infinity Broadcasting case, that there can be no reasonable dispute that University Hospital is a state entity. It is expressly established by the state legislature as an instrumentality of the state, pursuing, again, state and not local functions. And it's, again, not part of the legislature, clearly not part of the judiciary. It is an administrative agency in the sense that it was created by the legislature to administer and pursue a particular legislative program.
Mr. Weigel, what do you make of the fact that the enabling statute did not expressly state that university hospital decisions are reviewable as a final agency decision, like other enabling statutes have done, as the appellate court pointed out?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Your Honor. I appreciate the opportunity to address that. I would refer the court, I think, first to the Mandel Treatise, which talks about the fact, first of all, that as a matter of New Jersey constitutional law, it is the court's prerogative and duty to establish the allocation of where actions in lieu of prerogative writ go. And the court does that through rulemaking. So I think that, first of all, establishes the rule as the definitive law on this. But the Mandel Treatise notes that both before the rule was created, or the rules were created, and afterwards, there have sometimes been provisions added to the organic acts of particular agencies, as Your Honor alluded to. And Mandel says they're redundant in that case, because again, the rule is the controlling law. And indeed, the Constitution says that that is the case. So yes, it's not the first time, I think, in the law we've seen belt and suspenders, but we don't think that the fact that University Hospital statute doesn't have that language is meaningful here.
And did your client ever request that the hearing officer send this to the Office of Administrative Law for an ALJ hearing as a contested case?
Your Honor, we didn't specifically request that. We certainly requested that there be a hearing so that we could develop evidence of our allegations. But no, I don't believe that we requested that it be referred to an ALJ. Respectfully, I don't think that's necessary here, because I think, as this court recognized in the Harts Mountain case, procurements have a quasi-judicial quality, or procurement challenges do. But nonetheless, this court has not required the level of process that's required by an administrative adjudication, so long as there is the process that is due given the nature of the challenge. And I think the difficulty that Samuka has had here is we presented both allegations and evidence, including evidence that was adduced in a federal lawsuit brought by Shields' former president, that there were real conflict of interest issues here, and also evidence that there were serious steering concerns. Obviously, to develop that record more, we would need evidence that's in the unique possession of Shields and the hospital. That's why we asked the hospital for that discovery and for that hearing. We weren't given it. And of course, that's part of the relief that we're requesting when we get to the merits stage of our case.
But why wouldn't you just then bring this in the law division, where you could get discovery, you could get a hearing? I'm just not sure from a practical perspective, when you received the appellate division's decision, why didn't you just file the case in the law division? Why do you think from a practical perspective, you Or is it that you think there is some procedural advantage? What is the advantage to you of bringing this case in the appellate division rather than the law division, where you could get discovery, you could get an evidentiary hearing, et cetera?
Well, part of the issue, Your Honor, is that we went down this road already, right? We briefed all of these issues before the appellate division. And so in the event this court were to agree with Samuka's argument and remand to the appellate division, it would be ready and poised to address those other issues, as opposed to having to go and start over at the law division.
Can you say it one more time? I didn't understand. I thought you were just saying that you need discovery and you need a hearing and you never got that. But now it just seemed like you're saying, actually, the appellate division, we don't need any of that. And the appellate division could just go ahead and decide this immediately.
Thank you, Aaron. I understand the confusion. I apologize. There are a number of issues and defenses that University Hospital has raised. Some of them are of a more purely legal character that have not yet been addressed. Certainly, we believe that there is, we've advanced two arguments on the conflict of interest. We've said that under New Jersey case law that holds that in the public procurement context, even the appearance of a conflict of interest ought to be disqualifying, that the evidence that we've set forth meets that standard. But we've made an alternative argument, which is that if the court disagrees with us, if it believes the record does need to be better developed, then there will likely need to be more fact-finding. I think that that doesn't mean that the case has to go or is better positioned to go to the law division. As the court's aware, the rules themselves provide that in cases such as this one, where the agency whose decision is being reviewed has not permitted or conducted the sort of fact-finding that should have been conducted initially, the appellate division can either remand the case to the agency with directions to undertake that fact-finding, or it can retain jurisdiction and refer the case to the law division for the development of a record. I think it still makes sense for procurement challenges under state law, which is what Samuka's challenge is, to be heard by the appellate division, not just because, in our view, that's what Rule 223 calls for, but it makes sense for the appellate division to be applying statewide procurement law to state entities because it has familiarity with those sorts of challenges and hears them fairly frequently.
University Hospital serves a critically important function in treating and teaching with respect to healthcare. It doesn't have the ability to promulgate regulations, of course. How does it, beyond that particular mandate, how does it replicate, how does it fit in with the work of principal executive departments in implementing legislative policy?
Well, Your Honor, I think that, as I said earlier, I would be the first to admit that different agencies engage in, decision-making, which is some of which is more in the scope of the historic prerogative writs and some of which is not. And it may be the case that, and it seems to be the case, the University Hospital is on one side of the spectrum, that it doesn't engage in a lot of decision-making that challenges to which would be subject to actions in lieu of prerogative writ. That doesn't change the fact that this decision is squarely within the scope of that. And I would also note, by way of comparison, Your Honor, that we looked at UMDNJ and its case law addressing its challenges to see what sorts of decisions that entity had made that had been subject to prerogative writ challenges. And in the last 30 years or so, we could only find one case. And we cited that case in our briefing. It's the accounts receivable case. And that was a procurement challenge. Much like this one. So it may be the case that certain state administrative agencies that have features and pursue legislative programs that are not primarily or even at all rulemaking or quintessential agency administrative adjudication, that the kinds of decisions that will be reviewed in the appellate division for those agencies are primarily, if not exclusively, procurement ones. But in our view, again, that doesn't change the fact that they do, that procurement decisions squarely qualify under the rule.
But distinctly from University Hospital, UMDNJ was specifically designated to be part of an executive department. Doesn't that make the distinction more clear?
Your Honor, we don't think that that ought to be or historically has been the litmus test for whether an entity qualifies as a state administrative agency for purposes of Rule 223, at least. And again, you know, that was equally true of Rutgers in the Shim case, that it is not allocated to an executive branch department.
But the question of whether or not Rutgers was a state administrative agency was not the primary holding of the Shim case. Isn't that fair?
That is fair, Your Honor. And I'm not contending that this court is bound by stare decisis, but I do think that it's noteworthy that this court went out of its way in the Shim case to address this issue when arguably it didn't need to, but it felt that it was important to point out that the case should have, in fact, under the proper construction of Rule 223, have been brought in the appellate division rather than the law division. And in explaining why that was the case, I think the court's analysis really cited expressly to and conformed to the analysis of Infinity Broadcasting, and specifically, the provisions in the agency's organic statute that established it as an instrumentality of the state performing essential government functions, which is language that the Meadowlands Commission and Rutgers and University Hospital all have in common. And of course, the court could have pointed to any number of other factors or features about these entities, such as the long list of features that the appellate division weighed in this case, but we think it's noteworthy that it didn't do that. And we also think that as a matter of judicial policy and administration, it is a good thing for jurisdictional rules, and I'm using that term loosely, obviously this is a question of allocation rather than jurisdiction specifically, but it is analogous to a jurisdictional rule, that it's a good thing for jurisdictional rules to be straightforward and relatively easy to apply, because you don't want parties or courts to have to invest years of resources just to figure out what court the challenge should have been brought in the first place. And that's unfortunately the position that Samuka has found itself in. And that was in part because we thought we were doing what University Hospital expressly told us to do in its own RFP, but we also thought University Hospital was right based on everything that I've discussed in terms of the features of University Hospital and the nature of the procurement challenge at issue.
Mr. Weigel, you represent a client that contested the bid process, bid procurement. Are your arguments limited to University Hospitals in the bid procurement context?
I think that they are, Your Honor. I think the implication of our argument is that the court would be rejecting the invitation by University Hospital to engraft what we think is a new distinction into the case law, which is that we need to distinguish state agencies from state agencies that are subject to the APA. That's my understanding, or at least the gist of our opponent's argument.
Actually, no, that wasn't the gist of my question. I was going more towards the University Hospital decision itself. I mean, your contention is that in the context of bid procurement, that decision by the University Hospital is considered a final agency decision appealable in the first instance to the appellate division. There are multiple other decisions that University Hospital may make. Are you also arguing that those other decisions, let's say a healthcare decision, is considered a final agency decision?
No, thank you. I did misunderstand your question. We're not arguing that. Again, because we think that an important part of the analysis, and we think that part of the analysis that appropriately addresses the concerns that the Attorney General and University Hospital have raised about weeding out decisions and challenges goes to the nature of the decision rather than nature of the entity. And we think, again, there is no question where we have a public procurement with respect to a contract that is expressly conditioned on the receipt of state funds, that's again right in the bullseye of the historic prerogative writ. So I agree with Your Honor's characterization of our position.
Thank you.
The last point I think I'd like to make, Your Honors, is about the implications of the decision. I think that this really follows in some ways from the question that was just posed, which is, when one reads the appellate division decision, the implication, I think certainly under what we understand to be the proper framework, is that University Hospital isn't the sort of entity against whom prerogative writ challenges can be brought at all. Because the nature of the test that the appellate division lays out. It certainly doesn't seem to be saying that it's a local agency rather than a state agency. And that's why this case doesn't belong for the appellate division. It seems to be saying that in some fundamental respect, University Hospital doesn't qualify as the kind of public entity against which a prerogative writ challenge could be brought. And we think if that's the implication, it has potentially unsettling consequences for the ability of private persons such as Samuka or anyone else to challenge under state procurement law the decisions of an instrumentality of the state that is poised to spend tens of millions of dollars, if not more, on the pursuit of public health initiatives. We think that decision would be deeply unsettling, and we think that it's one that at the very least should be given careful consideration before the court goes down that road. If there are no other questions, Your Honor, I'm happy to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Slocum.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Under the rules of court, decisions that go straight to the appellate division are those that are spelled out at Rule 22382. It says final decisions or actions of any state administrative agency or officer. The rule doesn't say any state agency or officer, and it doesn't say any instrumentality of the state. It focuses on state administrative agency or officer. Now, the rule does not define the word administrative, but its meaning is clear from the plain language. The agency must administer the government on behalf of the sovereign. For instance, it could be acting in a quasi-legislative capacity by passing regulations of general applicability. Or maybe it could be acting in a quasi-judicial capacity by issuing licenses, penalties, permits, or otherwise deciding disputes. Those are the hallmarks of administrative action. The narrow question thus presented to this court on appeal is straightforward. Does University Hospital possess the requisite characteristics to make it a state administrative agency? And we believe the answer is no. It issues no orders. It promulgates no regulations. It imposes no penalties. It issues no licenses, implements no statutes. It does nothing that is governed by the Administrative Procedure Act. The governor cannot veto its decisions. It is not even allocated to a department in the executive branch, and it can even sell itself if it so desires. It is an acute care hospital, one of over 70 in New Jersey. It, like all of its private competitors, treats sick people in exchange for payment. And just like other not-for-profit hospitals in the state, it can sell itself on the open market. Now, to be sure, given its unique history, that it has remnant ties to state government, but merely being a creature of the state does not make it a state administrative agency. Now, during the counsel's opening statements, as well as in a supplemental briefing, counsel for Bergen has proposed a test. We disagree with it, which I'll get to in a little bit, but we have a counter proposal for the test, which we prepared for the court's consideration, so that if it would like to have a clear enunciation of the jurisprudence in this area, it can consider the following. The inquiry should start naturally with the plain language of the rule. Whether the entity is a state administrative agency. As part of that, the court should do a holistic analysis to look at what the entity is, what it does, and whether it administers the government on behalf of the sovereign. If the agency truly is administrative, then challenges should belong to the appellate division unless there is a specific exception spelled out somewhere. Conversely, if something does not bear the hallmarks of state administrative agency, then challenges belong to the law division unless there is a specific exception spelled out somewhere. So a few examples to help explain this, but I believe it's a simple, straightforward rule. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development is unquestionably a state administrative agency on the whole. Most challenges to its decisions belong to the appellate division, but there is a specific exception spelled out at Rule 474-8 for judgments from the wage collection section. Those belong to the law division. The same goes for the state police within the Department of Law and Public Safety. Challenges generally belong to the appellate division, except in the case of certain gun permit denials. Under Rule 223A, those matters belong to a designated gun judge in the vicinage, the Department of the Treasury. Again, unquestionably, a state administrative agency for challenges should go to the appellate division, but there is an exception set forth in statute and regulation. If it is a judgment or regulation of the director of the Division of Taxation, that belongs in the tax court under Rule 8:2. And there are, of course, other clear exceptions set forth by statute or court rule or common law, and they are contract claims under the Contractual Liability Act, OPRA denials under the Open Public Records Act, condemnation, inverse condemnation. I'm sure we could think of a couple others, but in each of those, justices, it is a narrow, clearly defined exception set forth in statute or rule so that the public has clear indication as to where they're supposed to go to air their grievances. On the other side, under our proposed test, take something like a public institution of higher education. We do not believe that public college on the whole is a state administrative agency. They teach people in exchange for tuition dollars. Those are not administrative entities under the purposes of Rule 223A2. So challenges belong to the law division, but there is at least one clear exception. The legislature has decided in Title 18A:3B-6F that tenure decisions made by those public institutions are to be made pursuant to the Administrative Procedure Act. And the statute also says that final decisions pursuant to that statute of those entities go to the appellate division. That is a clear exception set forth by the legislature, which pursuant to the Constitution, the legislature was allowed to do. At bottom, University Hospital bears none of the hallmarks of a state administrative agency. And there is no clear statutory or court ruled exception saying that its decisions on any matter, let alone the matter here, should go to the appellate division. The court below is correct to affirm, to rule in the hospital's favor, and we ask that this court affirm. Now, justices, there are some areas I'd like to address specifically about Bergen's arguments, but also would encourage you to interrupt me for questions if you have any at this time.
So it seems like you were suggesting what you called a clear test of, does the entity administer the government on behalf of the sovereign? Did I correctly understand that?
Yes, Justice.
Okay, so it seems like your adversary might be agreeing with that as a test, but just disagreeing as to whether University Hospital administers the government on behalf of the sovereign. And it seems like they were pointing to the language from the statute: the exercise by University Hospital of the powers conferred by this act shall be deemed to be public and essential government functions necessary for the welfare and health of the state and the people of New Jersey, and University Hospital shall be an instrumentality of the state. So how are we to determine, looking at the statute where it says the exercise of the powers conferred by this act shall be deemed to be public and essential government functions necessary for the welfare and health of the state, how do we agree with you that it's not administering the government on behalf of the sovereign? Is that just disagreeing with the legislature's determination that it is doing so?
I just respectfully disagree, Justice. The court rule focuses on state administrative agency, not whether you are a public institution or a creature of the state, or whether what you do is a public function. So the two are very separate inquiries. And respectfully, the term administrative should be driven by the plain language: to administer, to actually run the government for the sovereign. And the Administrative Procedure Act, while not itself a definitive statement of what that term means, is certainly very instructive, because that is the mechanism set forth by the legislature for how the government is to administer the government. How are quasi-legislative and quasi-judicial decisions to be carried out when you're acting on behalf of the government over the subjects? And so treating sick.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to finish that treating sick people in exchange for payment is not a true government administrative function. So there are many, many hospitals do the same exact thing every single day.
So are you suggesting that we are supposed to be applying the definition of state agency from the APA?
That is one factor, of course. I am not saying it is the only factor. Instead, I respectfully submit that it should be a holistic analysis where the court looks to, on the whole, what is the entity? Part of the analysis should be, where is it in the executive branch? Is it in but not of, or is it carved out? Does it have particular statutes? Does it actually impose fines, issue regulations? Is it subject to the Administrative Procedure Act? Whatever the legislature said about the entity, look to see what it is and decide, on the whole, is it administrative? Then, under the rule 22382, then presumptively its decisions go to the appellate division, unless you have an exception.
I think your adversary argues, though, that it's important to have a clear test that is not a multi-30-factor balancing test where it's not clear which factor matters and which factor doesn't, so that parties know where to file in the first instance. I understand that you're saying that there are a lot of different factors that courts have considered in the past, but it does seem like somewhat of a grab bag without being able to say these are the two factors that matter, or these are the four factors that matter. So how do we determine, without a definite number of factors that we're supposed to look to, whether the entity is, as you said, quote, administering the government on behalf of the sovereign?
Of course, Justice. I think it would be a rare entity indeed, and frankly, I can't conceive of one, that is subject to the Administrative Procedure Act and renders a decision under the APA, which would then not go to the appellate division. So that certainly is a very, very perhaps dispositive factor, but I am just loath to suggest that this shall be the only factor. Instead, what I'm suggesting is that the courts should have the flexibility and the legislature should have the flexibility to define what the entities in state government look like and what they do. In the vast majority of circumstances, the outcome should be crystal clear. And I believe in this circumstance, it is crystal clear. We treat sick people in exchange for money. We don't administer the government on behalf of the sovereign.
Sorry, so just to make sure I understand, based on what you just said, it seems like if it meets the definition of state agency in the APA, then it's automatically going to the APDIV. But even if it doesn't meet the definition of state agency in the APA, it might be going to the APDIV based on an unknown number of other factors that the court can holistically consider.
I think that is a fair summary, Justice. I would just respectfully submit that for this court to say this is the one, two factors and decide that the rule of law for how to define that in a vacuum, I think is a little treacherous, because the legislature might create some entity in the future, which, maybe you decide on the future. If we had known about the entity it was going to create, we wouldn't have framed the rule that we had done so today. That's why I respectfully submit it should be a holistic analysis, but the APA should weigh heavily in that analysis. If I may turn to Bergen's proposed test, which I've heard from the opening statements, but also in their brief, their supplemental brief, pages 16 to 17, it sounds like they want to ask first, is the entity or is the decision one that is historically subject to an action in lieu of prerogative writs? Or I guess the prerogative writ. If yes, then merely ask, are they a state entity? Respectfully, that disregards the plain language of the rule. The prerogative writs were varied in many, and they focus on the government, whether it was local, state, or otherwise. So merely asking, are they a state entity, and then were they subject to prerogative writ, really just distills the rule down to, are they the state in any capacity versus are they a state administrative agency? So I respectfully submit that the proposed test of Bergen is fundamentally inconsistent with the plain language of the rule. And I also point out that there were some discussions during Bergen's oral argument about various other statutes and what agency means under those other statutes. And I point out, Justices, that the legislature in many other contexts has set forth what is the state for various purposes. Open Public Records has one purpose for what is the state. Open Public Meetings Act has another purpose. The Conflict of Interest Law has yet another. Contractual Liability Act, the list goes on and on and on. And every single statute has its own particular purpose. So to look to any of those per se as the one and only rule as to what the state is, to engraft it upon what the court rules say, I think is inappropriate, with, of course, the exception of the Administrative Procedure Act, which by definition is how government is administered. So I think the APA is the one exception whereby that statutory definition should be given somewhat higher deference, as it were, extra scrutiny in conjunction with the court rule versus, for instance, the Conflict of Interest Law. Additionally, Bergen discussed the case of Shim, Obviously, as this court is aware, the issue of SHIM and what Rutgers was or where to hear those challenges was not briefed by the parties, nor was it raised below. The Lippman Court, the appellate division, it noted at the very end of this decision that the question of where to sue Rutgers for domicile wasn't briefed, and therefore they were not going to comment on it. But this court decided sua sponte to drop a footnote. I think, as I heard Bergen's counsel agree, that is not a footnote warranting stare decisis status. It is dicta, and obviously this not being briefed and the issue being now before the court is not bound by it if it disagrees with it. However, in the context of Title 18A, the SHIM footnote certainly makes sense. As I said at the outset, 18A colon 3B-6 says that when decisions, whether they be on tenure or employees or, quote, other issues arising under Title 18A of the New Jersey statutes involving higher education, those matters can go to the appellate division. And the legislature certainly has the power under the Constitution to dictate that certain matters shall go to the appellate division. So SHIM, I don't believe, is the be-all and end-all for this case. It is a dicta footnote, but even in the context of deciding how to proceed in the rule of law, it certainly fits in with the rule of law we are proposing. And as one final comment, Justices, unless you have any further questions, I heard at the end of counsel's argument that if this court were to affirm, it would not have the ability to air its grievances. I don't believe the appellate division said that, nor are we articulating that argument. If they sue us in the law division, they're certainly allowed to sue us. We believe that they will lose, but they'll lose on the merits. They will have their day. They just chose their own court.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, Mr. Slocum. Ms. Gregory.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I don't want to reiterate everything that has already been very capably said, but I do want to start just by returning to Chief Justice, your original question today, which is why would we not look to the plain text of the rule in beginning our analysis? And I think the answer to that clearly is we should. I want to highlight the fact, as we mentioned in our brief, that the term state administrative agency has been a deliberate choice by this court in all of the adoptions of the various iterations of the rule. I think it's also important to highlight the fact that the main issue with Bergen's argument today is that it threatens to read that middle word, administrative, right out of whatever test this court adopts. And I think that that highlights the concerns that have been indicated here today. We ask that the appellate division decision be affirmed for two primary reasons. And I want to address, with respect to the first primary reason, Justice Wiener, after your concern about this limitless test. The appellate division decision here, far from being a nebulous, collection of factors, is consistent with the rule's text, its history, and a contemporaneous understanding of what the term state administrative agency meant at the time the rule was first adopted. All of these sources contemplate an entity that was delegated a portion of the legislature's power for a very specific purpose and was also granted traditional hallmarks of administrative authority to accomplish that mandate. Counsel for University Hospital touched on a few of them. I think we touch on other ones in our brief, and Justice Ravner, you indicated earlier, the ability to promulgate regulations, the ability to utilize OAL, the ability to adjudicate contested cases, the ability to administer relief prior to judicial review. All of these things are found. There's also, of course, the express legislative statements that Justice Fischelli, you pointed out to, but all of these are found, they're rooted either in the plain language of the rule or in that historical understanding of what an administrative agency traditionally does, which we would agree is administer government. And I think, to Your Honor, Justice Wiener-Apter's concerns, this is not a limitless, collection of factors. These are all tied to legislative intent. The legislature knows how to create state administrative agencies. It has been doing that for a long time. And while it may not use a magic combination of words every single time, looking to the legislature's intent with that historical understanding of what a state administrative agency is really no different function than this court traditionally performs when looking at statutory analysis. The second reason we ask this court to affirm the appellate division's decision here is that, consistent with what I just said, the appellate division correctly relied on University Hospitals enabling legislation to inform its analysis. Again, the legislature knows when it wants to create a state administrative agency here. And it is black letter law that its words and actions are the best indicator of its intent. Here, as counsel for University Hospital indicated, we would submit that University Hospital has none of the traditional hallmarks of state administrative agencies that we just discussed. And by contrast, Justice Pierre-Louis, as you pointed out, perhaps one of the oddest functions it can do is the fact that it can sell itself, particularly when you look at the fact that a state administrative agency is historically one that has been delegated a portion of the legislature's power. It would seem odd for that entity to then be able to sell itself on the open market. It's interesting here that there seems to be a dispute between all of the parties, really, or the parties and us, about what is broadening the test and what is narrowing the test. So I just want to be really clear. It is our position that the term state administrative agency is and was always meant to apply to a specific type of state entity. It should not be broadly construed to refer to every state entity nor every state agency. And ultimately, we would ask the court to affirm the appellate division's decision and to reject the arguments by Bergen today that threaten to read really the most crucial portion of the term right out of the court rule.
Questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add, Ms. Gregory?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Weigel, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to make a couple of points. If I can start on the question of clarity, which I think everyone seems to be in agreement is important consideration for the court as it construes this rule. First, I respectfully reject the suggestion that Samuka's interpretation of Rule 223 reads the word administrative out of the rule. I think the question that is in dispute between the parties is, what does administrative mean? And as I hope I was able to show in my response to your questions, Mr. Chief Justice, we do believe that that term has meaning. It refers to agencies that are established by the legislature to administer a specific legislatively mandated program. It excludes agencies that are created by the judiciary. It excludes components of the legislature itself. So do we adopt a broader interpretation of administrative
than the specific legislative program that United University Hospital was created to maintain? I read the language in the statute that I think is the most helpful to you, but it certainly doesn't seem like it's creating a legislative program and then creating University Hospital to administer it, unless a hospital itself is somehow a legislative program.
Your Honor, I think the legislature has made an intentional decision to make public health and the promotion of public health a government program. And our opponent, and maybe I misunderstood him, but I understood University Hospitals Council to say something along the lines of treating people in exchange for payment is not a government function. I think respectfully, the legislature seems to have a different understanding. And it's certainly true that the contours of the legislative programs and the administrative state have waxed and waned over time. But whether or not the legislature in the 1930s would see public health as an appropriate legislative function, I think the current legislature clearly does. In the same way
like
that
you're saying that public health is a general legislative goal or something that the legislature generally wants to advance. A program is usually defined by rules and who administers it and how. A program implies more than just we think people should be healthy. I don't see in the creation of University Hospital any type of program with rules that the University Hospital has to follow at all. The only place it really seems like it's spelling out rules is what it has to do if it wants to sell itself, which again does not seem like something that a legislative program would usually come with.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think that University Hospital administers a program of public health at least as much as Rutgers administers a program of public education. And that was the part of Rutgers organic statute that this court pointed to in the Shim case when describing why it thought the conclusion that Rutgers was a state administrative agency in that case was a clear one. that not only was it a state instrumentality, but that it was performing an essential government function of promoting public education. And I think certainly the expenditure of millions of dollars of state funds in pursuit of a state, if you want to call it a goal, we certainly would call it a goal, I would call it a program, that expenditure is the sort of government decision that has, again, historically been subject to an action in lieu of prerogative writ. And I think consistent with this court's decision in Shim, and we think the appellate division's decision in Noctegal, when that decision is being made by an entity established to serve a state function, certainly not a legislative function, not a local function, that it falls under the rule. I think that we hear what I think respectfully are question-begging arguments from University Hospital and the Attorney General about how the term administrative needs to be defined, although they're not able to point to any decision by this court or the appellate division for that matter before this case in which the distinctions that they are urging as essential have been adopted. We certainly don't think those decisions are essential, and we think that they would have unfortunate consequences in at least two different areas. One is clarity, because I think what was clear from University Hospitals and the Attorney General's arguments is that they're not able to give the court a clear applicable test that is anything short of some kind of multi-factor balancing test. I heard the University Hospitals Council say, well, the APA is an important consideration, but it's not a dispositive one. Well, frankly, I'm not sure how helpful that's going to be for litigants in future courts, because there's no dispute in this case that quintessential executive branch agencies qualify as state administrative agencies under the rule. The question is, what are the boundaries of that term, right? And in Rutgers, in the Shim case, this court found that state administrative agencies weren't limited to those quintessential executive branch agencies. I think that the interpretive rule that we've offered to the court is a clear one. I think it's clear how it would be applied. And so when we look at the reasons why that rule should supposedly not be advanced, again, all that I have heard is that it's supposedly going to open the floodgates to the review in the appellate division of a whole host of decisions that wouldn't otherwise be before it. And there's been no substantiation of that supposed consequence. There's been no entity named. And I think, again, there were examples cited in University Hospital's brief of, you know, what about decisions by Rutgers about what room students are assigned to? Surely those won't be heard in the appellate division. And of course, the answer is they won't, but not because Rutgers isn't a state administrative agency, but because those aren't the sort of decisions against which a prerogative writ challenge could be taken. You could take a quintessential administrative agency and come up with the same sort of trivial examples of decisions, right? You could say, what about a challenge to what's being served at lunch in the Department of State's cafeteria? That can't be challenged to a subject to an appellate division challenge. And the answer is, of course, it's not. But again, for the same reason, not because the nature of the agency, but because of the nature of the decision. So I think when it comes to the consideration of clarity, Samuka's standard is clearly superior, and we certainly just don't have any substantiation of the kind of, you know, floodgates of litigation or challenges in the appellate division that the other side has held out. The other consequence that I think bears note is, again, what does this mean for the ability of parties to challenge procurement decisions by University Hospital going forward? Because if we look at this court's case law going well back before the 1947 Constitution and how it has analyzed prerogative writ challenges, it has used the term administrative agency to describe prerogative writ, the sorts of entities against which prerogative writ challenges can be brought, whether state or local, right? So the court has referred to state administrative agencies and local administrative agencies. So if the conclusion of the appellate division here and the implication of our opponent's argument is that University Hospital doesn't qualify as an administrative agency, that certainly seems to be their argument, then under this court's case law and under the history of prerogative writ challenges, the implication does appear to be that you could not bring this challenge under Rule 469 in the law division. And in fact, University Hospital Chu has not argued that before this court in this appeal, but it did expressly argue before the appellate division that it isn't subject to procurement law prerogative writ challenges at all. And so the position I expected to take based on its previous arguments, if this court were to send this case to the law division, is that under the appellate division's analysis, it has found that we're not an administrative agency. University Hospital is not an administrative agency, and that we don't, therefore, SMUCA doesn't have any procurement claim against it at all. It can only bring whatever private law, common law causes of action it might have. And of course, those don't include—
Didn't the Aptiv, I'm sorry, specifically say that it was not deciding whether University Hospital was subject to procurement law?
Your Honor, that's absolutely true. I'm not claiming that it was the express holding of the court. My argument is that the implications of the analysis that the appellate division gave, I think are consistent with the argument that University Hospital made below, which is simply not the sort of entity whose procurement decisions can be challenged, except insofar as a party might have a private law tort claim or contract claim. But of course, those aren't going to encompass the kinds of conflict of interest considerations that this court's public procurement law have held are essential considerations whenever public funds are expended, but would not—
I thought it was arguing below that it was not subject to the procurement laws at all. And obviously, if a court agreed with that, then it wouldn't be subject to a procurement law challenge. You seem to now be saying that University Hospital was saying, okay, accepting that we are subject to the procurement laws, we are not subject to a challenge to the procurement laws because of something special about us. Is that what you're saying they argued?
Your Honor is correct that they argued that they weren't subject to the procurement laws, but I think that there are two different elements or requirements that would need to be met for them to be subject to the procurement laws. One is that they're the sort of entity against which a prerogative writ challenge could be brought. So there's a consideration of the form of action that they are susceptible to, because as we read the case law, procurement challenges are always brought in the form of an action in lieu of prerogative writ. Then there is, I think, and that's, as I've said, under this court's case law and interpretation of the rules, that is a jurisdictional or a quasi-jurisdictional and allocation issue. They have also argued, as I understand their argument, that they're, as a matter of substantive law, they're exempt from public procurement laws. So in other words, I understand that to be an argument of, regardless of the form of action that you bring against us, we've just been legislatively exempted from public procurement law. We are free to contract privately. And so I think they could—
That's what I thought they were arguing also, but the Aptiv specifically didn't reach that. And so the law division would have to decide, are they subject to public procurement laws or are they not? And that would be adjudicated in the law division like any other question.
Your Honor, I think that question could be, but I think my concern is, if the holding of the appellate division is in essence, and we read it this way, that University Hospital is not the sort of entity, not the sort of public entity against which prerogative writ challenges can be brought at all, that form of action simply doesn't lie against an entity like University Hospital, then you don't reach University Hospital's question about whether the legislature has specifically exempted them from the public procurement laws, because we can't bring the form of action that we would need to bring in order to challenge to assert that challenge. We would only be able to bring a private common law kind of action, whether in contract or tort, whatever may be available to us. But again, that's not going to be a vehicle by which we could vindicate the concerns we've raised, at least not in any obvious way, regarding conflict of interest and similar allegations.
I just want to point out that we don't have to guess what the Aptiv held. They said, we hold that the legislature did not intend to make University Hospital a state administrative agency when it created the hospital as a body, corporate and politic, that is not situated in an executive branch department. Consequently, we dismiss the appeal. That's in the first paragraph of the decision.
Absolutely true, Your Honor. And again, our concern is, again, based on the arguments that have been articulated before this court, that really that decision ought to turn on the term administrative, that if University Hospital isn't an administrative agency of any sort, rather state or federal, that we would not be able to proceed under Rule 469. So we would not be able to bring the same sort of challenge that we have asserted for in front of the appellate division, in front of the law division. And that's why we think the notion that this is really just about allocation at the end of the day, just about the forum, is not certainly necessarily correct. And we fear it's not correct. And we think that ought to respectfully have unsettling implications when the court is considering an entity that has been specifically appropriated over $100 million in 2024 alone for the pursuit of its legislatively mandated public health functions.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.